The next time one of your kids is groaning over their science homework, pull out a little Mary Roach and show them how funny and engaging science can be. Mary's the science writer with a lust for research and a delight in the quirky. She's brought us Stiff, which is about dead people, and Packing for Mars, which is a look at the surreal world of zero gravity. Now she's taken on our digestive system, everything from taste to saliva to constipation, in her funny new book, Gulp, Adventures on the Alimentary Canal. Mary, good to have you with us. Welcome.
It's great to be here.
You know, I looked at this whole book, and I have to say, one of the things that really grabbed me was saliva. You make saliva sound like a superhero.
It's true. Saliva is the most misunderstood substance. It's the Rodney Dangerfield of bodily products. I feel that it is. It really is fairly miraculous. People associate it with bacteria, but in fact, it has these amazing antibacterial properties and antiviral. It protects your teeth. I don't even know where to begin.
But why do we say that our mouths are, you know, this breeding place for all this harmful stuff? What's the good side of the saliva in this case?
Well, it's a bizarre thing because, in fact, there is bacteria. Every time you eat something and you put your finger in your mouth, you're introducing bacteria. And, of course, it's warm and moist, so it's this perfect playground for bacteria. But on the other hand, they've done these studies that have shown that if you don't let an animal lick its wound, this was done with rodents, the wound will heal more slowly. In other words, if they're allowed to rub this disgusting substance into the wound, it heals more quickly. It contains things called nerve growth factor, skin growth factor. Human saliva has something called histatins, which speeds wound closure. So it's this, someone needs to bottle the stuff. and of course, in humans, one of the main things that saliva is doing is starting to break down some of the things like starch. In fact, amylase, which is the enzyme that breaks down starch, that's one of the same enzymes you find in laundry detergent. Laundry detergent is basically all the enzymes. Those are digestive enzymes. It's essentially, laundry detergent is a digestive tract in a box. It's got three different digestive enzymes. And so one of the things I asked an expert, who, by the way, his name was Louis Spitz.
You're joking.
No, I'm not.
Oh, dear.
I'm not. But I said, is it then the case that if you dribble something in a restaurant, whenever you get something on your clothes, shouldn't you just put a little dab of saliva on? Doesn't that make more sense than soda water? And I couldn't get him to admit that he put spit on his own clothes. He carries a Tide stain pen, sadly. But I'm going to continue to do that.
Why is it when I think of something delicious, my mouth waters?
See, now this is one of the weirdest things I came across. Not one, but two studies that were done looking into whether, in fact, the smell of food or the sight of food causes the mouth to water. And both of them, one of them was done in the 1960s by someone named Alexander Kerr. And it was a laboratory study where he had people come into the lab. And first of all, they were hungry. They hadn't eaten. And he starts frying eggs in front of them. You have that, the sight, the smell, the sound. And he had outfitted them with a salivary detection device, saying, Type 2 outflow recorder, I believe, was the device.
Right.
And in fact, there was not an increase in their outflow. And the subjects themselves were like, no, that's wrong. I could feel it. I could feel it. And he says, no. It's because when you're thinking about food, you're suddenly aware of your mouth and you're thinking about your mouth. And so you now are aware of saliva that's been there all along. I have seen the study and I still don't believe it. But why you would have that, why it would happen if in fact it did, is it just your body preparing to begin the process of moistening food? And because the basic thing saliva does is moisten, when you chew it up, you've got to form a bolus, a long cylindrical blob that you can easily swallow. So it's holding the pieces together. Saliva is helping you to swallow. So when you see food, you're just giving a heads up, you know, food's coming, sort of get the machinery working.
There's something else you talk about in the book. Two sets of nostrils?
Yes, this was news to me. You have a set of internal nostrils. They're called the posterior nares, nares meaning nostrils, and the back of the mouth, the opening between the mouth and the nasal cavity and the soft palate. You have this passageway such that when you're chewing food or you have wine in your mouth, a lot of the flavor components are in fact olfactory. They're coming up through those nostrils from the mouth into the top of the nasal cavity, which is where all the smelling goes on, the olfactory epithelium. So you have two kinds of smelling that you do with your external nostrils and your internal nostrils.
So are those two different areas experiencing scent in different ways?
Yes. Yes, the exterior nostrils, the ones most people are familiar with, that works on the inhale, and the internal nostrils are more on the exhale. If you've got wine in your mouth, say, and you exhale so that you're wafting air from your lungs up out of your nose, you're then carrying some of those volatiles, those lovely flavor components, up through the nose and out. So you're getting a second whammy on the flavor components, the olfactory components of the whatever it is in your mouth. So once I learned that, I've now become this weird person who kind of holds food in her mouth and exhales through the nose, because you get, to me, most of the aroma happens when you do that.
Well, at this moment, you have just changed how at least a part of America is going to be eating in the future.
Exactly.
Mary, you actually found a crunch expert.
I did, in the Netherlands. His name is Ton van Vliet. He studied the physics of crispy crunchy for going on 7 years. Oddly, the man told me, I don't like chips and such, which I found fascinating. Yeah. And it's true, we eat to a certain extent with our ears. The loud, satisfying crunch of a potato chip, it's called a brittle fracture. And what's going on is you're slowly deforming the structure, and the energy is building up, and then it breaks suddenly, gives way, and the energy is released very, very quickly, and the crack forms so fast, it's actually traveling at the speed of sound. So what you're hearing is a tiny sonic boom in your mouth, which is, who knew?
A sonic boom in my mouth.
A sonic boom. And it's, if you break it down, it's actually more like 100 little tiny bubbles bursting. It signals to you this is something fresh. So perhaps evolutionarily speaking, this is something that told us, aha, this is fresh. It's not rotting. It's got all its nutritional goodness. So it's something we like. We're drawn to it.
What if can you set it up so that I can't hear what I'm eating, but I'm still eating that same crunchy potato chip? I mean, is there a different reaction?
There's a study. I love that. I love food science. I love that someone did this study. But they either muted the sound, if someone is eating chips, or they knock out the higher registers. And so they're playing back a false sound to the person.
Right.
And then they ask them to rate the freshness of that chip. And people will say, no, that's not, this is staler. That they think it's stale. So it overrides the physical sensation in the mouth.
Well, I have to tell you, different experience seeing food through your eyes. Thanks so much for talking with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on.
Mary Roach is the author of Gulp, Adventures on the Alimentary Canal. Well, since we're talking digestion, it seems appropriate to send you to a recipe packed full of soothing ginger, just the thing to keep your tummy happy. So take a look at ginger milk pudding from Asian chef Ken Holm. You're going to find it on the website, splendidtable.org.